So good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Last time we read this speech of the Godhead, who's again telling Savitri that there's an inseparable, unbridgeable gulf between heaven and earth, and he advises her to come up to heaven. She has fully deserved to be in heaven. We read up to page 692, line 755, and then we went back and we looked in more detail at the text, and we stopped at line 715 on page 691. So that's where we'll start from now. You can give your message now, Don.
Oh, thank you very much. Please shut off your mobiles, which I'm about to do with mine. They are very disturbing in the middle of the class. Thank you very much for that.
So I think we'll start on the second line today. Patty, would you begin, please? 716.
Although the race is bound by its own kind, the soul in man is greater than his fate. Above the wash and surge of time and space, disengaging from the cosmic commonality, by which all life is kin in grief and joy, delivered from the universal law, the sunlight, single and transcendent spirit, can blaze its way through the mind's barrier wall and burn alone in the eternal sky, inhabitant of a wide and endless calm. O flame, withdraw into thy luminous self, or else return to thy original might, on a seer summit above thought and world, partner of my unhoured, be one with the infinity of my power, for thou art the world mother and the bride.
Thank you. We're at 691, page 691, and Patty started reading at line 716. And the speaker here, the person who is speaking, is the Lord, the Godhead of the world of everlasting day. He is wanting to convince Savitri, apparently trying to convince Savitri that it is impossible and out of the question for her to take Satyavan back to earth with her. There's an unbridgeable gulf between heaven and earth. And so he's advising her that since she has achieved so much inwardly, she's achieved such a high spiritual status, she should rise to heaven. And he tells her, the race, the human race, is bound by its own kind, the species. There are certain limits that are human limits, which the race can only very gradually exceed in a slow process of evolution. But individually, the soul in man is greater than his fate. Satyavan represents the soul of man, of humanity, and he is in the grip of the limitations of the earth, of the human race, in the grip of ignorance and death. But still, the soul can rise higher. He says, above the wash and surge of time and space, as if that's a huge ocean, the manifestation of time and space. Above that, disengaging, uncoupling from the cosmic commonality, the laws that are common to the whole physical universe, this cosmic commonality by which all life is kin in grief and joy. One can disengage from that and become delivered, liberated from the universal law. When that happens, the sunlight, single and transcendent spirit can blaze its way through the mind's barrier wall and burn alone in the eternal sky, like a great sun, inhabitant of a wide and endless calm. The spirit which is inhabiting all this in man can free itself and escape and become pure blazing spirit again. So he addresses Savitri, O flame. She's a burning flame of love and aspiration. He says, withdraw into your luminous self. Disengage from the cosmic commonalty. Or else, return to thy original might, your source, the power from which you have come, the Supreme Divine Mother. You can return to that status on a seer summit above thought and world, a summit from which everything in the universe can be seen. So again, he invites her. He says, become the partner of my unhoured eternity beyond the hours and the moments. Be one with the infinity of my power, for thou art the world mother and the bride. It's the first time he's acknowledged this. Anybody wants to ask anything about this passage?
I think it's a very difficult question. If Satyavan and his soul had such significance, his death would be the death of the human race?
Well, it would be symbolic of the human race.
And its demise. And its demise. Its end.
If it's symbolic of the fact that the limitations of the human race that keep us in the grip of ignorance, this half-lit mind, and this physicality, which by its very nature is impermanent and has to die. So if Savitri succeeds in convincing the Lord to let Satyavan, who has died, who is dead, return to the earth with her, that will be a victory for the whole of humanity. That will open up a whole new possibility. It will open, Sri Aurobindo says in a letter, the ways of immortality to human beings. And in that same letter, he says this whole story is supposed to have happened some very far back time in human history, when it was necessary to open these doors, these ways of immortality.
Possibility.
This possibility, yes.
Can I have another opinion?
Yes.
Like if Satyavan would have remained dead, it had taken a very long time. What Savitri had achieved was making a faster for humanity to come up.
Yes.
Otherwise, it would have taken its very, very much longer.
It's anyway taking such a long time,
yeah,
but it would have.
Compared to that,
yes.
She
has been born to speed things up, exactly. Yes. The name Savitri is a name of the consort or Shakti of Lord Brahma, the creator. That is the dynamic conscious force that is the partner of the Supreme Lord. This is in the Indian tradition, the idea that the masculine power conceives, gives sanction, and the one who executes, who carries things out, who gives birth to everything, that is the mother. And of course, that mother is also the bride of the Lord.
So we have to follow two concepts. One is like divine, to manifestation, then creator, creatrix, and further humanity. Other is the image of Brahma and the bride, and then they are following the creation. So there are two images we have to follow.
Well, in this book, of course, the image that Sri Aurobindo takes up is the image of the mother.
Yeah.
We have this book three, the book of the Divine Mother. And she, in fact, in his conception and in this book, she represents the Supreme Being, the Purushottama,
yeah,
who is both masculine and feminine.
So the bride is a contrary
yes.
viewpoint here.
Yeah, but it refers, I think, to that pristine beauty of Savitri, the young bride. But she's the bride of the human soul. She's also the bride of the Lord. Because, of course, the human soul is the Lord descended into the grip of ignorance and death. Shall we go on? Patty.
On December 1st, maybe you know that this year they performed Vasava Datta, Sri Aurobindo's dramatic romance that he wrote in 1915. So this was the year Mother left, no? To go back to Europe. So the concept of the woman as the world mother and the bride is also in there in a
mm-hmm.
lesser way
mm-hmm.
because he calls her the queen of the Aryan world
mm.
and of course he's going to make her the bride, but it's like what he did for woman at that time, womanhood, you know, he raised up the whole of womanhood. This is what she really is. She's not to be kept down, she's not to be abused, she's to be adored and cared for and all that. So he established that community.
This part was dictated, I think, in 1948 or 49. Lorraine, you like to read? Yeah, yes.
Mm. Out of the fruitless yearning of Earth's life, out of her feeble, unconvincing dream, recovering wings that crossed infinity, pass back into the power from which thou comest. To that thou canst uplift thy formless flight, thy heart can rise from its unsatisfied beats and feel the immortal and spiritual joy of a soul that never lost felicity. Lift up the fallen heart of love which flutters, cast down the desires of this into the gulf. Forever rescued out of nature's chains, discover what the aimless cycles want. There intertwined with all thy life has meant, here vainly sought in a terrestrial form. Break into eternity thy mortal mold, melt, lighten me into thy invisible flame.
Thank you. So he's telling her to give up her connection with her physical body. He says you can rise up out of this fruitless, barren yearning of Earth's life. Earth's life is never going to be fulfilled. It's fruitless, all your yearnings. You can rise up out of Earth's feeble, unconvincing dream. There's nothing there that can satisfy. But you can gain back your wings, your powerful wings that can cross infinity, and you can pass back, you can melt back into that power which is your origin from which you came. You can lift up your formless flight. In order to do that, you will have to give up your form, your shape, even we could say your individuality. Your heart can rise up from its unsatisfied beats. Your heart that thinks that if you can be on earth with Satyavan, it will be satisfied. Now it's not satisfied. No? But your heart can rise up out of these unsatisfied beatings of the human heart and feel the immortal and spiritual joy of a soul that never lost infinity. It's always been infinite. Sorry? Felicity. So isn't that funny? Why did I read infinity? Felicity, bliss. So lift up this fallen heart of human love, which is fluttering like a helpless bird, no? It's been thrown down into the abysses of desire, into the gulfs, into the depths. But if you abandon the forms and shapes of nature, if you are rescue, allow yourself to be out of those shapes, you will be able to discover what all the cycles of time have been longing for, what the aimless cycles want. And there on the heights, intertwined with all thy life has meant, you will be intertwined, you will be united with Satyavan. Your love will be fulfilled here on earth, that what you've been longing for is vainly sought in a terrestrial form, in an earthly body. So break your mortal mold, give it up, escape from it, break out into eternity. He says, you are like lightning, melt into your invisible, formless flame, your origin.
This line 743 is not very clear. Aimless cycles and then discover. He says ultimately, if you give up this and go take his advice, then discover the aimless cycles.
No, discover what the aimless cycles want. The cycles of time are wandering, all these eons, they are not aware of what they want, so they are aimless. But you can discover what it is that they want. You know? And what is it? It is supreme love and bliss. Yes, Don.
The explanation of Felicity in this book I thought quite interesting. I just hit upon
it. Okay, this is Rand Hicks. Please read it, yes.
Intense happiness, bliss, or delight, often carrying the sense of such a state empowered to foster a like condition of happiness in others by its influence. Mm.
So it's a word that Sri Aurobindo uses rather often, yes, in the poem. So that's what he's telling her. Melt, lightning, into thy invisible flame. Yes, we can think of these aimless cycles as being the cycles of birth and death, no?
Yeah.
And the soul is passing through them again and again and again and again for a long time without knowing really why, but it's not allowed to stop that series of cycles until it has found what it really wants. This is the human condition.
This light blue, like the sky on a beautiful day, is the color of felicity.
That's the color of felicity, like the blue in mother's.
Yeah, it's also Sri Aurobindo's blue.
That's the blue in mother's flag.
Light in the mind. Yeah,
that pale blue of mother's
flag. The color of the ashram instead of red.
Yeah, this red is the transformed physical. Anyway, let's go on.
Grace the material.
Sorry?
No, grace the material is not the color.
Grace the color of despondency and gloom.
It's different. The walls are not.
But the color of the ashram flag I was seeing on the December 2nd, that color is better.
The color of the bulletin, no? It's the transformed physical. Paula, you would read?
Clasp, ocean, deep into thyself thy wave, happy forever in the embosoming surge. Grow one with the still passion of the depths. Then shalt thou know the lover and the loved, leaving the limits dividing him and thee. Receive him into boundless savitri. Lose thyself into infinite Satyavan. O miracle, where thou beganest, there cease. Mm. But
thank you.
Savitri,
thank you.
Oh, I get stuck. Oh, darn.
Sorry, I gave you such a little bit to read, but we have to stop there.
You can have another passage later.
Oh, he says, you are an ocean, potentially an ocean, formless, limitless ocean of love and bliss and power. So embrace deep into that ocean which is yourself, the little wave that is your individualized human form. Let that wave melt back into the ocean from which you came. That little wave then will be happy forever in this embosoming surge carried into the heart of that ocean. And it will grow one, or you can grow one, with the still passion of the depths. This still passion, it's one of Sri Aurobindo's oxymorons, two things that seem to be contradictory: passion, intensity, full of emotion and movement, and the still passion of the depths. In the depths of the ocean, there's all that immense force and power. It's at its greatest when it's still, most powerful. So then you will know the lover and the loved. You will be able to get away from the limits that divide you from him. You will be able to receive the lover and the loved into boundless savitri. You will be without limits. And you will be able to lose yourself in infinite Satyava, O miracle, where thou beganst, there cease. Melt back into your origin, the all love, the all bliss, the all force. It's wonderful poetry. It sounds so tempting. We feel that if somebody made this offer to us, we wouldn't be able to resist. No? How is Savitri going to answer him?
For me, all this from out of the fruitless yearning, what she is, he is describing, what she has or what she can see. In a way, we have also to aim for this.
Yes, of course. Yes.
And because she has it, she can then bring it down.
Yes. But here, he's tempting her that she would disengage herself from the cosmic commonality. Don't, at the moment you're so attached to that, he says, you want to change things in the manifestation. Let go of all that. Come up here. It's so much, so wonderful. This is one of the tests. It's actually the same test. It's been coming in so many different forms. No? Here it gets formulated in another, even more powerful way. So what will she answer? Sudhanya, you'll read?
What Savitri answered the dragon god,
capable of the suffering world, my soul and his kingdom remain in me. To the one thus offers all life,
lives,
lives by all, to raise the world, to God in breathless life, to bring God down to the world on earth in pain, to change the earthly life to life divine. I keep my will to save the world and men. Even the charm of thy angry voice, O blissful Godhead, cannot cease and snare. I sacrifice not earth to happier worlds.
Let's pause there. We haven't actually read this part yet. So I'm going to suggest that we read on to the end of this speech at the top of page 695, and then we'll go back and look at it in more detail. So who is next to read? Rosa.
Because death burned the fellows first I did, and his dynamic will in men and things. So only could the common esteem begin.
The enormous.
Whence came his profitless wilderness of stars, his mighty barren wheeling of the sun.
Okay, would you read? Sure. Yes. Start at the beginning, please.
Who made the soul of futile life infinite, planted the purpose and the hope in the heart, set nature to a huge and meaningless task, or planned vermilion aeon efforts waste? What force condemned to birth and death and tears? These conscious creatures crawling on the globe, if earth can look up to the light of heaven and hear an answer to her lonely cry, not vain their meeting, nor heaven's touch is near. If thou and I are true, the world is true. Although thou hide thyself behind thy works, to be is not a senseless paradox. Since God has made earth, earth must make in her God. What hides within her breast, she must reveal. I claim thee for the world that thou hast made.
Thank you. Who's next? We are not going to discuss it now. Would you read next?
If man lives bound by his humanity, if he is tied forever to his pain, let a greater being then arise from man. The superhuman, the eternal mate, with the immortal shine of earthly forms. Else will creation wane, and this great world a nothing that in time's moment seems to be. But I have seen through the intentioned mark. I have felt the secret spirit stirring things, carrying the body of the growing God. It looks through bathing forms at veilless truth. It pushes back the curtain of the gods. It climbs towards its own eternity.
Thank you. Tuan.
That the God answered to the woman's heart. O living power of the incarnate word, all that the spirit has dreamt, thou canst create. Thou art the force by which I made the world. Thou art my vision and my will and voice. But knowledge too is thine. The world plan thou knowest, and the early process of the pace of time. In the impetuous strife of thy heart of flame, in thy passion to deliver man and earth, indignant at the impediments of time and the slow evolution's sluggard steps, slumbering God in man, awakened mid the ineffable silences into endless vistas of the unknown and unseen, across the lost confines of the limiting mind, and the superconscious perils borderline into the danger of the infinite.
Thank you. Would you read? Then we can come forward to this row. You will read, yeah.
But if thou wilt not wait for time and God, do then thy work and force thy will on faith, as I have taken from thee, my Lord of night, and taken from thee my twilight's doubts and dreams. So now I take my light of utter day. These are my symbol kingdoms, but not here can the great choice be made that fixes fate, or uttered the sanction of the voice supreme. Arise upon a ladder of greater worlds to the infinity where no world can be, but not in the wide air where a greater life uplifts its mystery and its miracle, and not on the luminous peaks of summit mind, or in the hold where subtle matter's spirit hides in its light of shimmering secrecies. Secrecies?
Yeah, okay.
Can there be heard the Eternal's firm command that joins the head of destiny to its base? These only are the mediating links. Nor theirs is the originating site, nor the fulfilling act or last support that bears perpetually the cosmic pile.
Thank you.
You are the powers that hold the ends of time. Spirit foresees, matter unfolds its thought. The dumb executor of God's decrees, omitting no
iota
and no dot. Agent unquestioning, inconscient, stark, evolving, inevitably or charged content, intention of its force in time, in animate beings and inanimate things. Immutably it fulfills its ordered task. It cancels not the title of things done, unswerving from the oracular command. It alters not the steps of the unseen. If thou must indeed deliver man and earth on the spiritual heights, look down on life, discover the truth of God and man and world, then do thy task knowing and seeing all. Ascend, O soul, into thy timeless self. Choose destiny's call and stamp thy will on time.
Thank you. This is the crucial moment when he acknowledges who she is and her power, and he says, you have the power to do anything, but you also have knowledge. So if you really intend to deliver man on earth, you are going to have to leave this world, this symbol world that we're in now, this symbol world of everlasting day. It can't be done here. It can't be done in the worlds of life. It can't be done in the worlds of mind. We have to go beyond time and space. Only beyond the manifestation can the command be made that will change things here. So he invites her to do it. So let's go back and have a look from the middle of page 693. Corinne, you would read? Line 800. No, oh, wait a minute. No. We read this. Well, we read it. Now we're reading it again. You want to go back to line 656. Is that where we want to go? All right. Yes. Okay. On page 692. Savitri's answer.
But Savitri answered to the raging God, in vain canst solitary exist. Two spirits say thou on the suffering world. My soul and is indissolubly linked in the one task for which our lives were born. To raise the word to God in deathless life, to bring God down to the word on earth to change, to change the hurt divine to life divine. I keep my will to save the word in man, even the charm of the alluring voice, O blissful Godhead, cannot sigh and snare. I sacrifice not first to have your word.
Thank you. In vain thou temptest with solitary bliss. She's promised such amazing bliss, no? Receive him into boundless Savitri, lose thyself into infinite Satyavan. But she says, you are tempting me with solitary bliss, just the two of us, two spirits saved out of a suffering world. My soul and his soul, Satyavan's soul, are indissolubly linked. They are two aspects of one soul, no? And they are linked in the one task for which our lives were born. They have taken human forms and human lives for one purpose, which is to raise the world to God in deathless light and to bring God down to the world. That's why we came on earth, to change the earthly life to life divine. So I keep my will to save the world and man. Even your voice, your alluring voice, your beautiful voice, Lord, O blissful Godhead, can't trap me, it can't seize and snare me. I am not going to sacrifice the earth to happier worlds, for the sake of happier worlds. Will you read? Lupa. Yeah.
This solitary bliss, it is here very much was in the earth consciousness since long to be that married couple is the only bliss to achieve. Ne? And here in this point, it's clear there is a work to do together. That is so.
Yes, in vain thou temptest with solitary bliss two spirits saved out of a suffering world. So her and Satyavan, okay, they could be blissful in heaven, why are Savitri and Satyavan married? Why have they met, been taken human births and lives? And met on earth, fallen on love, in love on earth, got married. It's because they have come from those higher levels, from that origin, with a task, one task. That's why they were born. And this task is the task of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, to raise the world to God in deathless light. To bring God down to the world. That's why we came on earth, she says, to change the earthly life, life divine. Then she explains a little further. Lyuba, will you read? Yeah.
Because they dwell in the eternal's vast idea and his dynamic will for man and things, so only could the enormous sin begin. Whence came this profitless wilderness of stars, this mighty barren willing of the suns? Who made the soul of futile life and time, planted a purpose and a hope in the heart, set nature to a huge and meaningless task, or planned for million eon efforts waste? What force could then to birth and death and tears, these conscious creatures crawling on the globe?
Thank you. Savitri is not asking these questions because she doesn't know the answer. These are rhetorical questions. She's asking these questions to emphasize the answer which is given at the beginning of the passage. All this has happened because there dwelt the Eternal's vast idea and his dynamic will, because those things dwelt, inhabits men and thing. So only could the enormous scene begin. This whole universe has only come into existence because of that. Are you familiar with this word whence? From where? Where did this profitless wilderness of stars, they're so beautiful nowadays, we have the privilege that we can see something of the beauty of the material universe, no, through the Hubble telescope and other, from the space station and so on. But what is it all for? Is it just a desert, a wilderness, profitless, without a meaning? All these suns, these billions and billions of circling suns, is it really barren? Doesn't it have any meaning or purpose? Isn't anything going to come out of it? Why is the soul here? Who made the soul of this apparently useless life in time? Who's planted a purpose and a hope in our human heart? Who has set nature to this huge and apparently meaningless task? Who has planned a million eon efforts waste? The effort of nature, the toiling of the stars, it has really gone on for millions of eons, no? Who's planned all that? And is it really a waste? It can't be. No, it's not possible. So what is the force that has condemned these conscious creatures, all of us, here, crawling about on the globe like ants or a virus or something? What has condemned us to this cycle of birth and death and tears? There must be a meaning to it, and she is going to say what the meaning is. Amitoj, would you read?
If old can look up to the light of heaven and hear an answer to her lonely cry, not rain their meeting, nor heaven's touch a sneer. If thou and I are true, the world is true, although thou hide thyself behind thy works. To be is not a senseless paradox. Since God has made earth, earth must make in her God. What hides within her breast she must. I claim thee for the world that thou hast made.
Let's pause there. It's only a few lines, but it says so much. Anybody would like to ask anything about these lines?
What better way to deal with an enemy than to catch him right there?
But he's not an enemy.
Sense, the earth, if it changes, also changes God.
reveals God.
Reveals God. Doesn't change. Okay.
And this is the mutual debt that binds man to the Supreme, you know, and binds earth to the Supreme. Actually, it's two poles of the same thing, two aspects of the same thing. They can't be separated. And if the higher worlds are real, then the lower world must also be real. It's also golden. But he says it so poignantly. He says the sign of all this is that if earthly beings, the earth consciousness, can look up to some higher light and hear an answer, receive a response to her cry, to her appeal, then their meeting is not in vain. It has an outcome, and the touch of heaven is not a snare, it's not a trap or a delusion. If you, all wonderful Godhead, are real, and if I, Savitri, am real, the whole world is real, is true. You're hiding yourself behind all these forms, these things that you've made. But even so, to exist, existence, is not a meaningless paradox. It has a meaning, since the Supreme Divine Consciousness has emanated from itself all this universe. Then this universe has to eventually reveal what it's hiding within its breast. So stop trying to delude me, as Patty says. I'm claiming you, Lord, for this world that you have made.
Shrivatan, I love this image. You're in 795, line 795, 796, 779. Would you say a word about those three lines?
We haven't quite come there yet, huh? You're reading ahead, Alice.
I'm sorry, I thought we had already read it.
Yes. Yes, you can read the next bit. You start at line 788. If man lives. Would you please start reading at line 788? It's the one. Yeah.
If man lives bound by his humanity, if he is tied forever to his pain, let a greater being then arise from man, the superman,
the superhuman,
the superhuman with the eternal mate, and the immortal shine through earthly forms. Else were creation vain, and this great world a nothing that in time's moments seems to be. But I have seen through the insentient mask. I have felt a secret spirit stir in things, carrying the body of the growing God. Keep on?
Yes, three more lines.
It looks through veiling forms at veilless truth. It pushes back the curtain of the gods. It climbs towards its own eternity.
Thank you. If human beings are forever limited by their human nature, the limitations of the human state, if human beings are tied forever to their suffering and their pain, if that can't be changed, then let a greater being than man arise, a higher species, a superhuman species, that can mate with the eternal, who can allow the immortal to shine through earthly forms. Otherwise, this whole creation that you've made will be in vain, and this great world will indeed be a nothing, an illusion that only seems to be in the time, moments of time. But she says, but I am sure that it's not like that. I have seen through this insentient mask. This was the phrase you were asking about, Alice? Yes.
Well, yeah, these three lines.
I have seen through the insentient mask this mask of matter, which seems not to have any consciousness, which is insentient. No? I have seen through that, this mask of material existence. I have felt stirring in things, in material objects, a secret spirit moving, and that secret spirit is carrying the body of the growing God, the divine being who's going to manifest eventually in all the forms of earth. That secret spirit is looking through all these veilless forms. It's seeing what's behind them, these veiling forms, these appearances that hide the veilless truth. He says, I have looked through that, and that spirit is looking through that. And that spirit is gradually pushing back the curtain of the gods, this curtain of appearances, of material appearances. And that secret spirit is climbing towards its own eternity, its own transcendent state. Yes, come, Audrey.
Is that it says carrying the body of the growing God, but that is actually our perception of God. It is not that God is changing, it is just that our perception of God is changing.
We can say that if the aim is to have a divine life here in the material universe, then the substance has to change. There will still be bodies. It seems that that is the intention, that there will still be many bodies and appearances and forms and movements and all kinds of things. But the substance will have to change. So that's the growing body of God, the body of the growing God.
In the world.
Of course, the Indian tradition tells us, and I think by now we know, that the divine is inhabiting all these material forms. But these material forms are hiding, are veiling that divine presence. Even if we know how to look through the insentient mask, it's still a veil. No? So the matter must become able to express the divine presence.
Pregnancy is like God is growing inside of everything and every being.
Yeah, this bothers Audrey, the idea that God might change, might be growing.
No.
Sorry.
But it seems contradictory to me.
Yes.
In some places, God is there and in everything, and he's the same.
You say, did you like God?
But just think of the whole process of evolution that has started from this not even matter, this plasma of it wasn't even gas. We don't know what it is, that plasma or whatever it was. And then, so that expression of the divine has been growing and changing and evolving to bring about this world. But this is obviously not the end of the process. It's going to go on. There's lots more growing.
And it's not all of
time. I think that God has individualized itself into unique individuals, and that is growing towards the shape of the God. So individual God is growing towards the ultimate God which you have in mind.
But
like one God is not changing, but individual aspects of God which we all are, all creation is
awareness.
Climbing towards that.
Our awareness, only God doesn't change. Our awareness that there is a God in this, there is a God in this.
But who has decided to undertake this adventure?
Yes.
Dawn.
We're here for mutual gain, mutual awareness.
God has decided. God has decided. This is all his play. So, of course, in his origin, like all of us, he's eternal and infinite and beyond all this and beyond individualization. But since he is able to be conscious in several different states of consciousness at the same time, that's difficult for us. Our problem is that we're either in one state of consciousness or we're in another state of consciousness. But Sri Aurobindo describes it that this supreme consciousness can be transcendent and universal, and all the individuals, all the separate different individuals, at the same time, all the billions of individuals, he can be enjoying all those. It's like that aphorism about the drops of honey.
But that energy is dependent on our evolving to change.
It's making us evolve. It's driving, he says.
And
the it's
of God is us, are we. Okay? If I may, if you allow me to...
Let me just finish these lines, Tuan, then you can. This secret spirit in things, that's the divine presence, no? Is carrying this possibility of the body of the growing God. That spirit is looking through all these veilless forms and it's seeing the veilless truths behind, and it is climbing towards its own eternity in each and every particle and being. Yes, please, Tuan.
On your face. So in this sense, I see the mask as our body. She, being embodied, if you're not a human being, looking through that body, which it has limited senses, so that she doesn't perceive, she perceives something that stirs everything, that is in everything, and that everything carries the body of the growing God. That looks through veiling forms, because we are growing God, that should be the purpose. And that looks through veiling forms, as well those forms are veiled, to a veiled truth, which is clear, it's not veiled. And pushes back the curtain of the gods,
which is the veil.
And it climbs towards its own eternity, that thing that stirs. We climb back to the, that supports our body, and like that. I don't know if I'm clear, but I read it like that.
But I think you are right in principle, Tuan, but I think if you're talking about the body, we can't say it's an insentient mass. That's why I said that the mask is matter. The body is not insentient.
Well, yeah,
but the forms, you can say the material forms are the mask.
Poetically seen, it can be insentient.
What?
Poetically seen, it can be
okay, relatively, yes.
Insentient. To emphasize the sensitive of the secret spirit.
Please don't think of matter as a lump of lifeless nothing there, and then we are alive, and matter is that everything has energy in it there. E equals MC squared and NaCl and whatever else you want to call it. Everything is moving. Everything is alive. Everything is there. We're becoming more and more aware of what? Even what? We don't clearly know, and we're trying to become more and more aware of it. There's a miracle that's going on.
Yes.
Insentience is also ignorance. That insentience we are saying is also ignorance.
Ignorance relates to the mind. Insentient refers to the senses. So we think that this metal seems to be insentient. As Don says, of course, it's containing consciousness, but that consciousness is so densely compressed that, and it doesn't have the tools to feel, which is a kind of consciousness. But it must have had the potential for senses and for awareness, must have been there right from the very beginning. Even the scientists, the materialist physicists have had to admit this, that none of it could be happening unless it had been somehow potential in the beginning. Yes, Professor.
So that applied spirituality is something attracts me to Sri Aurobindo. You know, it has to be applicable. So when you said that by the fact that Savitri brought Satyavan back opens the possibility of immortality, the line 791 says, the superhuman with the eternal mate.
Mm.
That means when you reach that level, you have the companions of godly beings. That's what he means. If that's the case, is it already happened in Karna, for example? She fell in love with, I don't know who she was, I forgot her name, fell in love with the sun god. Then a son was born out of that. So the possibility is already open. So it's still possible.
I think these are symbolic myths. And that's all I can say about these lines. I can't say anything more about better than what Sri Aurobindo says.
But eternal mate is puzzling here in this context.
Mating means uniting.
Eternal mate means you have a partner in super
partners, companions.
It means uniting with. So the superhuman, that is, she's asking for a higher race than humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So that superhuman race should be able to mate, to unite with the eternal.
But the human race already united with the Surya, no? And the Karna came out of that. The possibility is already open, that's what I'm saying.
I think it's time to
Yes, I'd like to close with just one thing, asking us to remember the symbol of Sri Aurobindo is we ascending and God descending. And I think that's very much what this is about. Am I wrong or right?
We are not separate from God. We are the divine, as if forgetting, he searches for himself. That's in Book 1, Canto 4, where all the answers are, actually. He has become us. He is in us. But he's as if forgetting. He's forgotten. We don't remember where we came from, who and what we really are. So that is our task. Mother said it's the first necessity, no? To be a true Aurobindian, is to find out who you really are, beyond all the appearances, beyond these veiling masks. And then we will know, we can become aware in ourselves of that divine presence, which should become the acting center of our life in Aurobindo. We can listen to Mother reading some lines from this canto.
About when the golden glimpse of the infinity, its obligation and of the purpose of a soul, its infallible silence, absolute and love. He sees the whiteness of a boundless sky. He sees the presence of a starless earth. He sees the burning of a worldwide sun. To look upon each other, soul, soul, soul.
thanks to Sri Aurobindo.